Now, if you've been following the ongoing debate over immigration in the United States, you've probably heard the term chain migration come up. The term itself is controversial. It usually refers to family-based preferences for immigrants. President Trump has called for an end to the program. He says it leads to one immigrant bringing many more people into the U.S., and he says some of the people who enter the country this way could pose a national security risk. Those in favor of family-based immigration say it's a long-standing legal method to live in the United States and keep families together, and immigrants brought over with family preferences still go through a years-long immigration process. Elise Cohen is an assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. Elise, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob.
Can you talk about how this system works, these family-based preferences for immigration that some people are calling chain migration?
Yeah, so basically we have four major principles that currently shape our U.S. policy on legal permanent immigration. The first one, as you mentioned, is this family reunification principle. And so that is the largest category. It's been in place really as the guiding principle of our visa program since 1965. Beyond that, we also do have a skills-based subset. And, of course, we offer some protection on a humanitarian basis to refugees. The final category, the smallest one, is that diversity of admissions by country of origin, what's come to be known popularly as the diversity visa lottery. But this chain migration term has been used by demographers describing this process where people are more likely to move to places that they already know someone, where they already have family. So it sort of makes sense from their perspective. These migration flows will go to certain locales, certain destinations where we see people of similar origins and their family members migrate. What we see now is a more politicized usage of chain migration to give kind of a negative framing to this idea that we really shouldn't have this program, that we should be more restrictive of legal immigration to the U.S. And that's where you hear President Donald Trump and some of those supporters, and actually going back to the 80s and even the 90s, some groups that really favor restrictive immigration policy, even back then starting to kind of use this term chain migration with that negative connotation.
I want to give a listen to President Trump speaking during the State of the Union address. He called for the end of, he used the phrase chain migration. Here's a listen.
Under the current broken system, a single immigrant can bring in virtually unlimited numbers of distant relatives. Under our plan, we focus on the immediate family by limiting sponsorships to spouses and minor children.
So, Elise, let's talk about the virtually unlimited numbers of distant relatives. In practice, does family preference migration, chain migration, work that way?
Well, there's a little bit of a partial truth in saying unlimited distant relatives. So green card holders, what we call the lawful permanent residents, they can petition to bring in their spouses and their unmarried children. U.S. citizens can bring in their parents, their married adult children, and their adult siblings. So that's really what we're talking about. This kind of claim that all distant relatives can be brought in is circulating, but it's not exactly accurate because neither citizens nor lawful permanent residents can bring in aunts or uncles or cousins or nieces or nephews, in-laws, you know, grandparents. So I think it's a bit more specific than what that quote would lead people to believe. Another thing to keep in mind, you know, for the popularity of it at the moment is kind of thinking about even where we are in Wisconsin. We had a lot of German concentrations, and this is due to the fact that, I guess, if we were going to use chain migration, we had, you know, chain migration shaping our history as a country. And so that's why we even had sort of all German-speaking towns early in our Wisconsin state history as a result of what he would call chain migration and his supporters, and what others have popularly known as the term family reunification.
Elise Cohen is with us, assistant professor of political science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc, talking about family reunification, immigration, called chain migration by some. We're figuring out how it works. Elise, when someone comes into the country under this program, what kind of steps do they go through?
So they have to first petition in order to have these, you know, immediate relatives, or if it's something like for a U.S. citizen, you know, the married adult children or the adult sibling. And so there will be a rather lengthy waiting process. We also have to keep in mind that the U.S. citizens are those that can bring in more of those relatives. And to become a U.S. citizen, you know, to naturalize, you have to go through a five-year residency and lots of other hoops in order to naturalize. So there's a process there. It's not sort of this immediate chain reaction, you know, pun intended, where someone would be able to legally immigrate and just right away bring in all of these relatives. So for people that are, for example, bringing in relatives from a country like Mexico or the Philippines, there could be, you know, 23, 25-year waiting period for some of those relatives to be able to get their visa to come.
And the idea, the concern about chain migration, bringing in distant relatives, I think is, okay, if this person brings in their kids and this person brings in their siblings and then the sibling brings in somebody and so on, this chain can keep spreading and spreading. But what you're saying is it can be upwards of 20 years to bring the next person in.
Yes, because we use caps based on countries. It's a very complex immigration policy system we have, you know, because we have that family reunification, but then within that, we have preferences where we will first give preference to U.S. citizens bringing their immediate, truly immediate relatives. We will then give preferences, you know, to the other categories bringing in immediate versus, you know, adult siblings or married adult children. And then that's just one of those four that I told you initially kind of structures our policy. I think that makes it vulnerable to exploitation, you know, for political purposes, because it is really hard for an ordinary American to understand all of these categories, let alone the per country cap that we have in place, so that if it is a high volume country where we have a lot of visas that have been given, like Mexico or the Philippines or China or India, yeah, you're right, the waiting period could be over 20 years.
There's been a lot of talk in recent years about dealing with illegal immigration and cutting the numbers of undocumented immigrants in the country. There's now a turn, it seems, to talk about the currently legal forms of immigration, like this family reunification. Why do you think that has changed?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of my research focuses on this concept called nativism. It's sort of a defensive nationalism, where it can be internal minority groups present in the country already, but it's often especially targeting foreigners or immigrants. And we have a long history of that in our country, and we have a lot of what we call nativist waves that become popular at different moments in our sort of collective history and politics. I think we've always had these two faces going back to our founding as a political system of, on one hand, having this sort of almost instinct to be restrictive and exclusive about who can really be an American, and at the same time having this idea of being an American creed where anyone can be welcome here if they believe in our Constitution and democracy and principles of freedom and liberty. So we really have always had these sort of two faces, the nativist tendencies that we've seen with different very restrictive policies targeting different groups based on their ethnic origins, for example, or their race or religion, and at the same time, a segment of Americans that really kind of embrace that you can come from anywhere in the world and then become American by believing in these American values and ideas. Okay. So right now, I think what we're seeing is, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off, a bit of that, one of those nativist waves has taken hold in our politics.
We'll leave it there for now, Elise, but maybe we can talk the history a little more in a future show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Rob.
That's Elise Cohen, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-Sheboygan and UW-Manitowoc. She joined us to talk about family reunification migration or chain migration and the political fight over it.